The first speaker in the afternoon session is Johannes Brandl from the University of Salzburg. How realists can face the historic constraints of truth and Hannes Morgen. This is the first lecture in a series of five lectures this afternoon, which constitute a panel called Truth, Assertability, and the Escape from the Excluded.
Thank you. Thank you for everyone coming here and taking part in this little panel. The first talk is partly historical, but it also aspires to have address a systematic problem. So the historical or exegetical part is, of course, about what Brendano's conception of truth was, whether he had such a conception, why that is not clear, or whether he had several conceptions. So I'll talk about that. But let me begin to lead you into the more systematic interest that is indicated by the main title of my talk. And this is about realism. So the topic of realism begins with two questions. We have questions about reality and we have questions about truth. And if you look at the left column first, so the basic option you have when you ask about the nature of reality is between various forms of realism opposed to forms of idealism, and the characteristic criteria that you use for characterizing a position in fitting into one or the other category is mind independence or mind dependence. Where mind dependence, you're talking about conditions of existence. So constructed facts or facts that depend on a conceptual framework would then be mind dependent, and realists are taken to understand existence conditions to be mind independent. On the right hand column, you see, and the terminology is confusing here because we don't have a second term, so Wolfgang Kühne and others use the term then aletheic realism, others capitalize realism here, and this is opposed to anti-realism. And the criteria that differentiates the positions here is verification transcendence versus epistemically constrained or unconstrained truth conditions. Now, in the bottom line, you see that we have a third option here, namely going deflationism in answering questions about the nature of truth. And that has the nice feature that it doesn't constrain you at all what kind of answers you want to give about the nature of reality. This shows you that you cannot easily move from the left column to the right one, because you might be a realist in the left column and not be a realist about truth, because you could be a deflationist, or the other way. And the same, you could believe in mind-dependent facts, but not be an anti-realist about truth, because you are a deflationist. But this talk is not so much about deflationism, it's about another issue, namely, what about the right-to-left direction? If I am a realist, an aletheic realist, or an aletheic anti-realist, what kind of ontological claims do I have to commit myself to? And one position that has recently been developed by people like Crispin Wright and Michael Lynch complicates the picture further, but it does have to do with this kind of issue that I'm interested in here, namely to go pluralist. So as a pluralist, you start out with general principles that are reminiscent of what deflationists put forward. They would say that principle, like this quotational principle, give us the core meaning of the predicate true. Now, pluralists do not stop at that point. They say there's more to truth than just what's in these general principles. There are more specific principles that add then additional content, Christian Wright says, or additional function, Michael Lynch says, to the truth predicate. But these additional contents and functions, they can vary from domain to domain, from domain of discourse to another one. So typical examples that are often given here are, you have verification transcendent truth conditions in the realm of the natural sciences, but for instance, only warranted assertability conditions or super assertability conditions in moral contexts. Now, the question now is, what does that have to do with Brentano? And this is the question I want to answer you, because I found out in trying to sort out the texts that Brentano left behind that there are certain hints, or you could try to interpret Brentano's thinking about truth pointing towards that direction, and that's the course I will take here. So this is the structure of the remainder of the talk. I give you some basic information about Brentano's approach. I talk about a problem of interpretation, and then propose a tentative positive answer to the question whether Brentano might be an early pluralist about truth, and then I will have some, at the end, some very brief suggestions where we might want to move beyond Brentano. So I have to go over this very quickly, assuming that some of you might perhaps know a little about that. These are all controversial claims, but these are the foundations of Brentano's theory of truth, and I'm happy to discuss about that in the discussion, but I just present those things here. Basic truth bearers are judgments, so mental acts or mental episodes that are based on presentations. So in every judgment is based on a presentation, and every presentation presents one or more objects. These presentations specify objects in terms of properties, and these specifications can be limitlessly complex. For instance, you specify an object as one that is either French or German, but neither Hungarian nor Korean, and then you present such an object, and then you ask yourself, does such an object exist or not? So all judgments then have either positive or negative valency. The positive judgment asserts the existence of the kind of object you have presented, and the negative judgment rejects the existence of such an object. So now we know what the things are to which we should assign truth, according to Brentano. And now I'm showing you some excerpts of a famous lecture on the nature of, on the concept of truth that Brentano was giving in Vienna in 1889. And this is the only text we have about truth that Brentano actually published. There's nothing, well, not quite right. There are some footnotes, long footnotes in his in his book on ethics. But otherwise, we have just some short dictations, some letters. So as a main reference, we have that kind of lecture, that lecture. And in this lecture, Brentano, as an Aristotelian scholar, starts out, of course, from Aristotle as the main representative of the classical correspondence theory of truth. And after discussing various problems with this theory, in the first part, objections from the Neo-Kantians, Brentano then, somewhere in the middle of the lecture, comes up with the following improved version of Aristotle's definition of truth, where Aristotle says a judgment is true if the one who makes the judgment acts, that is, judges in accordance with things, and false if the acts are not in accordance with things. Then Brentano raises a problem for that. How can it be, or he reports an objection that people like Sigvard and Dilthey have made against the Aristotelian theory, how can it be false to accept a thing if it is presented in the mind? And Brentano answers this objection by saying, well, these people haven't heard of the distinction between formal and objective existence. A thing can, something can be in me intentionally when I'm representing a crocodile in the inn, but it doesn't exist formally, or vice versa. So this is not a serious problem for him. But Brignano says there are other problems with the Aristotelian theory which may seem less easy to dispose of. So what are these problems? And that's where Brignano will then make use of his theory of judgments to solve these problems. If we now go on to correct the mistake just considered, we arrive at the following next modification of the Aristotelian definitions of truth and error. The truth of a judgment consists in this. If the judgment is of the simplest sort, a positive acknowledgement of existence or a negative rejection of existence, it asserts of some object that exists, that that object exists, or it asserts of some object that does not exist, that that object does not exist. The underlining is from me, because that will be the only thing that Brignano needs to correct to get rid of the following problem. Consider the negative existential judgment, there is no dragon, or there are no dragons, where, so if the truth were to reside in correspondence between judgment and reality or an object, what would be the object corresponding to this judgment? And his solution is then simply to replace the underlined notion of assertion by the negative term denies, and so he then arrives at his final version, modification of the correspondence theory. A judgment is true if it asserts of some object that it is, that the object is, or if it denies of some object that it is not, that the object is. And this is all there is to the correspondence of true judgments and object about which we have heard so much. So is that then a form of deflationism? Sounds like, if that is all correspondence, what Brignano tells us, that seems to be a deflated version of a correspondence theory. Well, let's see. At the end of this lecture, there is a very brief hint which points in a new direction. Brignano, after providing this solution, Brignano says, I would understand if a listener now is disappointed. Is that everything we can say about truth? No. Even after the elimination of confusions and misunderstandings, our definition would convey nothing to one who lacked the necessary intuition. What would be the use of trying to elucidate the concepts red or blue? So that's his analogy, the concepts red or blue, if I couldn't present one with something red or blue. So here we have what people have called Brignano's concept empiricism. If you want to elucidate a concept, you have to point out experiences from which these basic concepts are drawn. Truth is such a concept, so just giving you the deflated version of the correspondence theory wouldn't be informative unless you point out the necessary intuitions you need for forming that concept. Where do you get these intuitions from? You ground it in the experience of evident judgments, like concepts are grounded in color experiences. All of this has been disregarded by those who were concerned with the nominal definition of truth. So at this point, Brignano is... So the first part of the lecture were just modifications and defense of the correspondence theory. Now comes this really novel idea, because that's the idea that everyone has missed so far. So here he wants to make an original contribution now. And the original contribution, which then becomes more explicit in the late dictations, is what the Brentanists call the gnosiological thesis. Truth pertains to the judgment of the person who judges correctly in the way in which anyone whose judgment were evident would judge about the thing. That's one of the places where he puts forward this thesis. Another one, this explains the concept of truth. A true judgment means originally as much as an evident judgment in the secondary sense, also a non-evident judgment. So in the primary sense, it means an evident judgment. In a secondary sense, a non-evident judgment that corresponds in all other respects with an evident one. So we have here the, and again, the notion of Übereinstimmung or correspondence, but this is no correspondence with judgment and reality. That is a correspondence between judgment and one judgment and another one, an evident one. Interestingly, the gnosiological thesis can already be found in early lectures about metaphysics that Renano gave in Würzburg in the 1860s. Truth and knowledge, in the strict sense, are the same. What should we make of this? In the Brenau scholarship, the standard interpretation is this. The early Brenau first had this idea of the gnosiological thesis and then dropped it as a crazy idea. Truth isn't the same as knowledge, because there is blind judgment, a judgment that doesn't express knowledge. But then Brentano for decades struggled with the correspondence theory and eventually came to give up the correspondence theory, not by modifying it, but completely giving it up, when he became a so-called reist that accepts only judgment about real things. Brentano needed something else. And the other theory that he then adopted was the old gnosiological thesis that he had dropped at the beginning, because he gave up the correspondence theory completely. So that is, as far as I can see, the usual interpretation that's put forward by people like Oscar Krauss and Kasti, and following them then Stegmüller and Kamitz and Schrefnitzky. They basically follow that scheme. And I don't trust this interpretation. And I don't trust this interpretation because Brenau seems to have been a concept empiricist throughout his career. Correct evident judgments provide the necessary intuition for grasping the concept of truth. He never seems to have given that up, this point he made at the end of the lecture, the 1889 lecture. And then you also discover in the texts of the late Brentano sentences like the following: and so we may stay with the old thesis of Aristotle, but we must resist the temptation to think of it as a profound truth from which we can draw a wealth of metaphysical consequences. So this is 1915, and that sounds very much what he already said in 1889. So there's not much hint of a big change in his conception of truth. So could we find a way of reading Brentano's texts by assuming that he was not holding different views at different times, but that he had several pieces that he tried to fit together into a kind of pluralist conception of truth, as I mentioned it at the beginning. Well, whether that is successful or not mainly depends on, I think, how we understand pluralism. If we understand it as a combination of what I call here two packages, that would mean that you take realism from the left and from the right corner, so realism as mind independence plus verification transcendence, and try to combine that with a package consisting of some form of mind-dependent facts, of mind-dependent reality plus epistemically constrained truth, then you try to combine problems, you combine two theories, and you combine all the problems that both theories have. And Sean Brand, in a recently published book on truth, calls that the inheritance problem. What's good pluralism if you just add up two theories that each of them have their substantial problems? So a more tempting approach here seems to be to say, well, let's try just to combine the two Aletheic views, so the views on the right column, and not add up their ontologies. So combine the theories, but do not combine their ontologies. Could that be a way to develop a form of a conception of truth that allow us to develop anti-realism without buying a form of any form of idealistic ontology. And since Brentano was so heavily opposed to any form of idealism on the ontological side, and that became explicit when he started his campaign of kicking out all non-real objects of his theory, it looks promising to follow this path to make sense of Brentano's theory. How could we do that? Well, we have a platitude. So, like in the case of Wright and Lynch, we start out with a platitude, and the platitude is the one we get from the modified correspondence formula. The deflated version of the correspondence theory gives us the core meaning of the predicate. And then we add additional content to the truth predicate depending on what types of judgments we are considering. So we do it differently in the case of judgments about real, positive judgments, or judgments about real things. In this case, we take the truth predicate to indicate existence, the existence of a real thing. I exist, atoms exist, God exists. But we interpret the truth predicate differently when we talk about judgments about non-real things. In this case, it indicates only agreement with evidence. So when you take a modally modified judgment, dragons might exist or dragons will exist, you do not interpret that as a possible dragon exists or a future dragon exists, which would then indicate existence of a new non-real object. If you have a reality transcendent judgment, these are the cases that you then make up the cases for Meinongian ontology, things that are neither round or not round, you don't form an existence judgment that would take truth in this case to point to the existence of a non-real object. And the same is about when you talk about facts, you do not interpret truth in this case as an indicator of existence. And an interesting case are then, of course, the psychological judgments, the ascriptions. You interpret, I am thinking of something as a judgment about me, so it indicates existence of a judger, but it does not exist in, indicate existence of an object that you are judging about. So perhaps then we can find an interesting link between what Brentano was working on and this recent movement of pluralism, but of course, to really make sense of such a historical connection, you will soon run into problems. And here are two of them, that our conception of what we consider to be a real thing isn't the same as Brentano's conception of a real thing. So we think of real things as objects that exist in space and time, or at least in time, if you allow for purely mental things. But for Brentano, a real thing is also characterized epistemically as a thing that you can possibly know with conclusive evidence. And if you can't know it with conclusive evidence, it is a thing that a superhuman mind, that is God, knows by acquaintance, let's say. So it seems that Brentano goes beyond what I've suggested by already placing a kind of epistemic constraint about what makes a thing real. Real things are knowable things for him, and I don't think that we should buy this second characterization. As far as I see, that's an unnecessary concession to an idealistic ontology, because you make things, in a certain sense, mind-dependent now. Okay, that's the last slide. Almost the last slide. Last but one slide. What about verification transcendence? We might agree with Brentano that basic positive truths, atoms exist, or perhaps God exists, are verification transcendent. But why should we accept, in addition to that, Brentano's claims that these truths can be evident, characterized as being evident only for a superhuman mind? Again, we can drop this latter clause, because I think that's a concession that Brentano makes to the foundationalist. So my conclusion then differs from Brentano's in this sense, that Brentano concludes his conception of truth by saying that he has arrived as a concept of truth that is established in the only sense in which it can both avert skepticism and defeat dogmatism, as well as subjectivism. So if that's your goals, then probably you are ending up with the kind of theory that Brentano suggested. But if you change your goals, and your goals are to do justice to your realistic and anti-realistic intuitions, then I think you can cut out some of these additional claims to which Brentano commits himself. So, thank you.